Welcome to Unreal, a podcast about Irish history, stories, and tradition. What happens when a king goes mad? When he leaves his home, his wife, and lands, and goes wandering in the woods and the wild? Such a strange frenzy came on Sweeney, an Irish king long ago. The life he came to live was a harsh and wild one, but, as the story shows, still a life where breathtaking beauty could be found. I'm Ruth Atkins, and this is Unreal. The story of Sweeney Gelt, sometimes called the Madness or Frenzy of Sweeney, or sometimes the Wanderings of Sweeney, is a medieval tale of magic and madness, dating from at least the 12th century. Not chosen to be one of the three sorrows of storytelling, it nonetheless has quite a bit in common with these tales. The story of a king cursed to wander the land, in wildness and sorrow, spending the rest of his years up to his death in nature instead of the world of men. The story has become a favourite of poets because of the beautifully evocative poems and lays recited throughout it. These are definitely at their best in the original Irish version, but I have tried to keep some of them, translated by J.G. O'Keefe, in my retelling here. The tale of how Sweeney came to be mad begins quite strangely, almost like a comedy instead of the story of beauty the tale soon grows into. Sweeney was king over an area called Dáil Áirithe, now modern-day Antrim. One day, as he surveyed his lands, Sweeney heard the sound of a bell, and he asked his people what the noise was. "It is the holy man, Ronan Finn," they answered. "He is marking out a church on your land." Sweeney was furious to hear of someone building on his land without permission, and he set off at once to drive Ronan away from the area. Sweeney's wife, Orin, tried to stop him from going, and grabbed the arm of his cloak, pulling him back. But the shoulder fastening broke, and the cloak came away into her hands. Leaving his cloak with his queen, Sweeney set out stark naked, until he reached the place where Ronan's church was being built. Now, Ronan was busy praying and chanting the psalms to bless the area, and with his psalm book or psalter in front of him, and his head bent in prayer, perhaps he just didn't notice the naked king approaching until it was too late. Sweeney grabbed onto the psalm book and threw it into the depths of the cold lake nearby. Then he grabbed Ronan and dragged him through the church, presumably intending to punish him severely. They were interrupted, however, by the cry of a messenger, who had come to ask for help in stopping a great battle that was about to take place at McGrath. Ronan and Sweeney hurried to McGrath, where the holy man attempted to make peace between the warring factions. He did not succeed, but Ronan made both sides promise that nobody would be killed at night, from the time the fighting stopped for the day to when it began again the following morning. King Sweeney, however, joined the fighting and quickly showed his contempt for Ronan's deal. Each morning, he would kill a man just before the battle began, and another each evening when the fighting was supposed to cease. Then, at last, on the day fixed for the great battle, Sweeney came across Ronan in person again. Ronan and his psalmists were blessing the warriors, sprinkling them with holy water. But when they threw water on Sweeney, he thought they were mocking him. He hurled his spear, killing one of Ronan's psalmists, and taking his dart, he threw it at Ronan, so that it pierced the sacred bell by his chest. Now it was Ronan's turn to grow angry. He placed a curse on Sweeney. "That bell which you have wounded will send you among the branches, so that you will be one with the birds. He will roam through Erin as a stark madman, and it shall be by a spear point that he will die." Ignoring Ronan's curse, Sweeney left and went to take his place among the others in the great battle. But when he got there, the roar of the battle was loud, like a herd of stags reverberating against the clouds of heaven. And when the noise and shouts reached Sweeney's ears, a sudden transformation came over him. His fingers and feet shook. His heart beat rapidly. His weapons fell from his hands. A great darkness and frenzy filled him, and Sweeney became at once disgusted with every place that he had ever been, and filled with desire for every place that he had never yet reached. Sweeney was under a madness, a wildness. He would never again be the powerful king and ruler that he had been up until now. And from here, the story grows much more poetic, as Sweeney goes wandering Ulster and Ireland, leaping from place to place, like a bird of the air, and leaving no field, bog, forest, or mountain untravelled. The story of Sweeney's madness has much in common with other tales of wild men, which have been told throughout the world for thousands of years, from biblical times and earlier, right up to our fascination with tales of feral children and wild people today. But one of the closest parallels to Sweeney's story comes with the tales of Merlin, the strange figure of Arthurian legends in Britain and France, who is often depicted as having gone mad or wild, and having a connection and mastery over the beasts of the forests as well as his magical talents. The early figure on whom Merlin was based was Myrddin Wyllt, or Myrddin the Wild, a Welsh bard who is said to have gone insane after watching a battle slaughter, fleeing into the forest to live among the animals and receiving the gift of prophecy. He was later cured from his insanity by a saint called Mungo. I'm not sure how much the tales of Sweeney and of Merlin came to influence and inspire each other, though they were around at similar times. What is clear, though, is that Ireland had a reputation for being a place where wild men thrived. A 13th century Norse text called The King's Mirror spoke about a number of wild men marvels that had been seen in Ireland. "It once happened in that country, and this seems indeed strange, that a living creature was caught in the forest, as to which no one could definitely say whether it was a man or some other animal. It had the human shape, but the entire body was covered in hair as the beasts are, and down the back it had a long, coarse mane, like that of a horse, which fell to both sides and trailed along the ground when the creature stooped in walking." The Norse text also described a class of wild men in Ireland called the Gelts, which seemed likely based on the legend of Sweeney's madness. "It happened that timid and youthful men who have never been in battle before are sometimes seized with such fear and terror that they lose their wits and run away from the rest into the forest, where they seek food like beasts, and shun the meeting of men like wild animals. It is also told that if these people live in the woods for 20 winters, feathers will grow upon their bodies as on birds, to protect them from the frost and cold. They have no large feathers to use in flight, but so great is their fleetness said to be, that it is not possible for other men or even for greyhounds to come near them. For these men can dash up into a tree almost as swiftly as apes or squirrels. Ronan's curse did not just make Sweeney mad. He also became fast and light-footed, so that when he ran, his feet barely shook the dew from the grass with his step. In the tale, he often thinks of himself as a bird with talons and feathers, and behaves with the lightness and speed that birds have. The curse also gave Sweeney a hatred and distrust of other people, and he could never stay long in their company without wishing to flee. So he ran without stopping, through field, mountain, bog and marsh, through the hard rocky clefts and the bushy branches of tall trees, from estuary to estuary and wood to wood, until he reached Glenbulken. This, the tale says, is where the madmen or Gelts of Ireland would go when their year in madness was complete. For there it was a beautiful place, sheltered from the wind, with clean wells and cool springs and watercress to feast on. Now, Sweeney had a brother, a man called Lingshacon, who came looking for him in Glenbulken. 3 times Lingshacon tried to capture Sweeney, but 3 times Sweeney escaped him, fleeing away. Nearby, Lingshacon owned a mill that was watched over by Lanogue, his wife's mother. One day, Sweeney passed the house, and Lanogue gave him some scraps, and so Sweeney returned there often for the food that she would pass his way. One day, Lingshacon spotted Sweeney by the millstream and went to speak to Lanogue. "Did Sweeney come to the mill, woman?" asked Lingshacon. "He was here last night," Lanogue answered. So Lingshacon disguised himself, putting on his mother-in-law's dress, and hid in the mill in her place, hoping to take Sweeney by surprise. That night, Sweeney came as usual to the mill, and approached what he thought was Lanogue. But as he looked into the person's eyes, he recognized Lingshacon, and sprang away at once out through the skylight of the house. "Pitiful is your pursuit of me, Lingshacon, chasing me from my place. Ronan does not let me trust you, so I must leave you now. I will go on to where my wife Oran is." In the years that had passed since Sweeney's madness, Oran, Sweeney's former wife, had moved on to find a new lover, and was now living with Gura, son of Cungal, the man next in line for the chieftainship that Sweeney had abandoned. While Gura was out hunting, Sweeney came to the camp and approached the hut where Oran was resting. He perched himself on the lintel and called out to her. "At ease you are, bright Oran, at the bedside with your lover, not so with me here. Once you did say, Oran, that you would not survive parted one day from Sweeney. But today you think little of your old friend. Warm are you on the down of a pleasant bed. Cold am I abroad till morning." Sweeney's words were harsh and full of judgment for his wife's betrayal. But just because Erin had moved on to a new partner did not mean that she didn't mourn the loss of Sweeney. She loved him deeply still, though she could not follow him into his madness. And so, her response to him is really interesting because of this, as well as being beautifully poetic. Though at ease I may be, my body is wasted since the day I heard of your ruin. I would rather sleep in a tree's narrow hollow beside thee, my husband, could I do so. If my choice were given me of the men of Erin and Alba, I would rather bide sinless with thee on water and watercress. I wish that we were together, and that feathers might grow on our bodies. In light and darkness I would wander with you each day and night. On hearing this, Sweeney forgave Orin. But no sooner had they finished speaking than Gura's army returned from their hunting, swarming into the camp from all sides. Sweeney fled alone once more. Hiding in a yew tree for several weeks, Sweeney was eventually found by the nobles of Dal Arida, and they sent Ling Shikhan once again to try and capture him. Ling Shikhan approached until he could see Sweeney in the branches above him, and he called out to him. "Sad it is, Sweeney, that your plight should be thus, you who once wore silk and satin." "Have you tidings of my people?" Sweeney responded. "I have," said Ling Shikhan. "There is life for none in your land after thee. It is to tell of it I have come. Dead is your renowned brother there, dead your father and your mother. There is another calamity there, bewailed by the men of Erin. Dead is thy fair wife of grief for thee. Calves are not let to cows amongst us in cold Arida, since your gentle daughter who loved you died, and likewise your sister's son. There is another story, and loath am I to tell it. Meetly are the men of Arida bewailing your only son." When Sweeney heard the news of these tragedies and the death of his only son, he fell from the branches of the yew tree in grief. As soon as he was on the ground, Ling Shikhan grabbed him and put him in manacles. "All your people are alive, Sweeney," he told him. It had been a trick. Sweeney was brought in fetters and chains to Dal Arida and locked in Ling Shikhan's quarters. There, trapped inside, his senses began to return to him. But Lanog, the old woman of the mill, was there too, and she began to cajole him to tell her some of the adventures he'd had while he was mad. "A curse on your mouth," said Sweeney, "ill is what you say, and God will not suffer me to go mad again." "For God's sake," said Lanog, "leap for me now one of the leaps you used to leap when you were mad." Sweeney did so, leaping a small gap from the bed rail to the end of the bench. "I could leap that myself," said Lanog, doing so. Then Sweeney made another leap, out through the skylight of the room. "I could leap that too," said the old woman, and she followed him again. They continued their contest outside, until they heard a loud clamour of a hunting call in the woods, and at the sound, Sweeney's wildness returned to him. And it's fascinating in the story that as his madness returns, so too does his poetry. His ability to recite long lays to the woods and trees and animals that surrounded him. Longing for my little home has come on my senses. The flocks in the plain, the deer on the mountain. I love not the merry prattle that men and women make. Sweeter to me is the warbling of the blackbirds in the quarter. I love not the trumpeting I hear at early morn. Sweeter to me the squeal of the badgers in Benabrock. For Sweeney, madness and wildness drove him out of normal life and gave him a cold, lonely bed of little comfort. But it also sharpened and sweetened his senses and his ability to express himself. Becoming mad again was like waking up. "Do you not deem my arts better?" crowed Lanogue. "Noble, slender madman, that I should be following you from the tops of the mountains." She continued to follow Sweeney in his leapings and wanderings until he reached a sheer cliff edge. There, the nimble Sweeney leaped from the fort down in front of Lanogue. She leaped after him, but fell, dropping from the cliff of Dún Sobracha and dashing against the rocks at the sea edge where she met her death. Sweeney knew then that he would never return to Dal Araida, for Ling Siachán would seek vengeance against him. Sweeney left Ireland and went to Britain, and there he came upon a great wood where he heard a great moaning and wailing coming from the trees and saw a strange man wandering. "Who are you, my man?" asked Sweeney. "I am a madman," the strange man said. "Ferchalla is my name." "If you were a madman," Sweeney said, "let us be friends, for I am a madman too." Ferchalla, whose name was once Aladdin, explained how he came to be wild. He had placed a spell on his enemies going to battle, so that they came clothed in bright silk and were easy to see. In anger, they gave three shouts against him, and the curse sent him wandering and fleeing, much as Sweeney had done too. The two madmen passed a year together, watching over each other and warning each other when trouble came near. And at the end of the year, Aladdin turned to Sweeney and said, "It is time we must part, for the end of my life has come. I must go to the place where it is destined I will die. I go now to Astúhig, where a blast of wind will cast me into the waterfall, so that I shall be drowned. I shall be buried in a churchyard of a saint and reach heaven, and that is the end of my life." "Oh, Sweeney, tell me what your fate will be." "At the Holy Moling's house," said Sweeney, "it's there my eternal rest will be. I shall fall by a spear point." So they parted ways, Aladdin to his death and Sweeney back to Ireland. And after much more wandering, Sweeney made it to the house of Saint Moling. The saint greeted him. "Welcome, in sooth, is your coming, Sweeney. It was destined you would end your life here, to leave here your history and adventures, and be buried in a churchyard of righteous folk. I bind you," he said, "that however much of Ireland you may travel each day, you will come to me each evening so that I may write your history." And so it was. By day, Sweeney would travel Ireland, to Athruig, Slievemish, or Ben Burka. But no matter where he had been in the day, he would return each night to Chacmulling to tell the saint his story. Moling had his cook leave milk out for Sweeney. She would toss it in the dung of the milking yard, and Sweeney came out cautiously and carefully to drink when no one was around. The cook was married to a swineherd, and one day the swineherd's sister spied her going to leave milk for Sweeney by the hedge. At once, the herd sister ran to her brother and said, "You cowardly creature, your wife is in the hedge with another man." On hearing this, the swineherd rose, and he grabbed his spear from the rack. He ran to where Sweeney was lying on the ground, lapping up milk from the dirt. The swineherd thrust his spear at Sweeney so that it lodged in his breast. When St. Moling heard what had happened, he rushed to the hedge and angrily berated the swineherd. "Christ's curse on you," he said. "Evil is the deed you have done. Short be your span of life and hell beyond." But Sweeney called the saint back. "That brings no relief to me, Moling," said Sweeney, "for the wound has already been dealt me." "Then you shall get an eric for it," said Moling. "You will be in heaven as long as I, by the will of the great Lord." With his dying breaths, Sweeney began to sing again, the songs of a madman and his love for the woods and the wild. "There was a time when I deemed more melodious than the quiet converse of people, the cooing of the turtle dove flitting about a pool. There was a time when I deemed more melodious than the voice of a beautiful woman, to hear at dawn the cry of the mountain grouse. Though goodly you deem in taverns your ale feasts with honour, I had rather drink water in theft from the palm of my hand from a well. Though goodly each bed without guile I have made throughout Erin, I had rather the couch above the wood I have made in Glen Bulkin." "Dear to me too, out of love for him," said Moling, "each place where the holy madman used to be. Dear to me is fair Glen Bulkin, because of perfect Sweeney's love of it. Dear each cool stream wherein the green-topped watercress grew, each well of bright water too, because Sweeney used to visit it." Moling took Sweeney by the hand and brought him to the church door, where Sweeney placed his shoulders against the post and his spirit fled its last flight, upwards, towards heaven, and he was buried honourably in the churchyard by Moling. The Madness of Sweeney is a Christian story, written down by monks in a medieval manuscript, and so it makes sense that the story ends this way, with Sweeney going from callously rejecting the work of the holy man Ronan to embracing the Christian help of St. Moling. But I think the story has some deeper levels than this. For though Sweeney's life is hard and lonely from the moment his curse begins, it is also filled with a beauty and a poetry he would never have accessed otherwise. Amid the trees and glens, feasting on water and watercress, the king who once wore silk and satin finds the importance of life's simple, natural pleasures. And as much as the tale ends with Sweeney embracing faith, it also ends with the holy man embracing the wild places where his friend used to roam, and the purity of the natural world seen through the eyes of one who abandoned civilization. There is, perhaps, something to be learned from madness and wanderings, the tale tells us. And so, though Sweeney's curse was a hard one to live with, it was not entirely tragic. Perhaps, at least to some extent, Ronan meant it as a gift. It brought a beauty to Sweeney that still strikes writers and artists and inspires poetry right up until this day. Thanks for listening to this episode of Unreal. You can find links to the sources, script, and music from today's episode on my website, unrealpodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend, follow or subscribe, or leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. I'll be back soon with another story. And until then, Gunairi on Bohirlath.